T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Wow. Beautiful, beautiful weather, Jane Duker, around the area. This is my favorite time of year. The trees are really turning, too. You know, I think we get ripped off every once in a while with some beautiful fall colors. It seems like this is pretty awesome this year, right?
Oh, it's
at least
beautiful.
The start of it.
I think we're going to have another good week of good weather, and the mold is bad. Allergies are not great, but the weather is beautiful.
It is beautiful. Kevin Wheeler joins us this afternoon. We're going to preview this Bob Gibson special tonight, which is going to be pretty cool. But let me chime in on a couple other things before we get to that. How are you, Mr. Wheeler?
First of all, when you were talking about beautiful, why didn't you say, speaking of beautiful, Kevin Wheeler's with us? I feel hurt.
Yeah, it was a miss. I'm a little off my game with the segues. I'll blame it on working at home, because that was an obvious one. I could have hit that one out of the park. Hey, you're kind of you're a good pop culture TV watching guy. I think I've asked Jane this, and I can't remember her answer. Have either of you watched Cobra Kai yet?
No, but I hear I should.
I watched the first two episodes. Oh, my. Oh, my.
It's pretty good.
I just wrapped
the first season.
Yeah?
Klein, are you watching it? I can't remember if Dave's watching it
right
now.
That's another one of those shows I've not watched, and another one of the movies I've not seen either. And I know that The Karate Kid's a classic.
Oh!
Yeah, I know.
Whoa,
shocking.
I know. Okay, well, then you shouldn't watch the show. You have to watch it. It's basically a reboot of The Karate Kid with Johnny and Ralph Macchio's character. You know, Johnny, what's his name? I can't remember the actor's name, but he married a woman from here in St. Louis. I had him on the air doing an interview several years ago, Kevin, and I actually shot him a message saying, hey, because we follow each other on Twitter, I said, hey, I got to take a shot. Would you do an interview? And I think, you know, this is what I remember, that back then he only had, I think, like 3,000 followers on Twitter. Now he's over 100,000 followers. So,
It's a cult. It's depressing. I mean, I'm like, okay, is this sort of this dark comedy? I'm like, this guy is just a schmo, and but I've heard it gets better,
it's great. Billy Zabka is the character that's the actor that plays Johnny Lawrence, and he is he's, for people who haven't seen the show, and there's two seasons out, the third season will come out in January. He plays a guy that really hasn't amounted to much and a bit of a loser. Ralph Macchio, meantime, is married to a beautiful wife. He's got kids, and he runs a car dealership. He kind of, you know, owns the area that they live in, California, and there's this rivalry that still exists, and it's very campy. Jane, I would stick with it because they don't take themselves too seriously.
That's extremely funny.
But they get the nostalgia right. The cast is really good. I just last night wrapped up the... Yeah, it's really good. And, you know, both those guys are executive producers, Billy Zabka and Ralph Macchio. And I think there's a couple other names involved. Oh, man, it's not Brad Pitt, but there's some other Hollywood types that are involved in producing it. The other show that I just wrapped was Ted Lasso on Apple Plus with Jason Sudeikis as this soccer coach from America. It's really funny. It's a really, really good show. So I would check those out. All right, Wheeler, tell me, this is going to be so much fun tonight. I've heard some of these clips, and we'll share a couple here. But Bob Gibson and Jack Buck, we put a special together that will air at what time tonight?
Right after Sports Open Line, so 8 o'clock till 9 o'clock. It's a full hour of Jack Buck and Bob Gibson. And you know, they take calls toward the latter part of the hour. They obviously talk about, you know, it's funny because, you know, I played a couple of these clips on Sports Up Online last night, Mark, and then obviously listened to the longer clips. It's funny to hear them talking about almost the same topics that baseball people talk about now when it comes to the pace of the game and how television has changed the pace of the game and how pitchers don't go deeper into games. And this was 25 years ago. This is from 1994. So actually 26 years ago now, September 30th, 1994. But it's so funny that it's like the conversations about those things haven't changed. And it's great hearing Jack and Gibby get into that.
Oh,
well, let's play. Dave has a couple of those sound bites. Let's play one of those bites about the I can't remember what that one was slugged when he was talking about the pitching and how many innings pitchers go and things along those lines, because this was a good clip. You'll hear this tonight on KMOX.
It sounds facetious, but it is the truth that some pitchers now in a 5-man rotation will pitch only 5 innings of the game. So they pitch 5 innings every 5 days.
Yeah,
and that's what it amounts to, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't really think that that's the pitcher's fault. The game has changed to the point where we have a setup man, we have a closer, and you really only look for the starter to pitch 7 innings, at the most 7 innings. If he starts wavering just a little bit after 7 innings, they get him out of there. So he's not really trained to pitch more than 7 innings.
Yeah, you not only pitch 9 innings, but you hit the ball and you ran the bases and you stole bases.
I would like to go back through the records and see how many games I pitched 12, 13, and 14 innings.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't do that anymore.
But, you know, Gibson wasn't a guy, Kevin, that was just, you know, full of nostalgia from the past. He realized the evolution of the game, right?
Yeah, you know, what I've always loved about Gibson's opinions on the game were the realism. Like, you heard him there. He's like, some people get on the pitchers like, the pitchers are soft. And he's like, nah, it's not their fault. They're being told that they can't do this. You know, Gibson was, you know, in the middle of this kind of the steroid scandal era in baseball. He said in an interview that if that was going on when he was playing, he probably would have done it too, because he was competitive and he didn't want anybody to have an edge on him. I mean, I've always respected that about Gibson, is when he talks about the current game, it's always from a very real perspective. It's never from the, you know, glory days, like my days were better and we were more awesome
humble
than the guys now. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no. I love that he saw that. He knows that. I mean, they are trained to only do this, and they're expected to pitch at much higher speeds, which, you know, can hurt the arm. And, yeah, I mean, he's just wonderful to listen to.
Here's one more soundbite. You'll hear these interviews tonight, these conversations between Bob Gibson and Jack Buck. He talked about facing Henry Aaron over the course of his career.
Earlier on, we played a home run that Henry Aaron hit off you. Did he hit many on a 3-0 count? Did he hit many home runs against
you? Boy, I sure hope not. You know, the home runs that guys hit off me, I tried not to remember. But pitching against Henry Aaron for 17 years, I assume that he hit a few off of me.
I don't know what the number is, but yeah, so you'll hear those conversations and more between. It's just good, Kevin, just to hear Jack's voice. You know,
it is.
We should have a little Jack Buck on every night just to give us a little bit of soothing comfort from, you know, the relief of COVID and everything else, because it's great to hear him on KMOX. Hey, by the way, another death today. He was 91 years old. Whitey Ford passed away. Hall of Famer for the New York Yankees. Won more World Series games than any other pitcher. Died in Long Island at his home on Thursday night.
It's been a crazy time in baseball. Obviously, Bob and Lou, and then Tom Seaver not that long ago, and now Whitey Ford. It's been a rough couple of months.
Yeah.
All right, I'm going to give you 60 seconds here, Kevin, because the next segment, when I let you go here, we're going to talk about Eddie Van Halen. And I know he made an impression. I've been listening to Van Halen like nonstop for 3 days. You know, it's sad that it sort of takes a passing to do that, right?
I mean, 100%. I mean, you know, Van Halen is, I mean, you know what's been the best to me, Mark, and what's really been fun for me in all of this? It's that people are doing the same thing all over the world that we're doing with Bob Gibson and Lou Brock, and that's telling stories. And I'm hearing and seeing all these things from, you know, from Rob Halford, from Judas Priest, and from so many other bands out there, and all of the respect that's being paid. It stinks that we only do those things after someone passes away, but I'm trying to get all of it in that I can.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you should check this out, because Mark Hemingway is a guy who writes about politics. But, you know, as many of us do that talk politics and other things, we have interests and passions for music and entertainment. And he wrote this great column with all these interesting tidbits about Eddie Van Halen that I was unaware of. You know, I pointed one of these out the other day where he first was playing the drums. He couldn't nail Wipeout, and that frustrated him, so he switched with Alex and grabbed a guitar. And I think, in retrospect, that was a pretty good move. So we'll talk more about Eddie Van Halen coming up next. And Kevin, you're back at 4:15 this afternoon. We got the Bob Gibson special 8 p.m. tonight on your home of the Cardinals, KMOX.
Mark Reardon now.
No, never. Yes, always.
Total Information p.m. at 4 on KMOX.
You know, Jane, you and I, as we pointed out many times, same age. I've got 6 months on you. Yeah. But I was 13 years old, 1978, when the first Van Halen record came out. And that was when I was just starting to buy records, riding my bike to a record store in suburban Chicago and buying stuff like Boston and, you know, Tom Petty and Fleetwood Mac and absolutely Van Halen. And I've been reading a lot, you know, ever since Eddie's death. And one of the best, I'm going to blow some smoke here because I really love this piece. Mark Hemingway is with us this afternoon, and he's a political guy. I don't even know if he's been on my show before. Maybe he has. He should have been, because I'm a fan of his. He's the book editor at The Federalist, was formerly a senior writer at The Weekly Standard. But he wrote, I think, one of the best, if not the best, pieces about Eddie Van Halen this week that I put up on Twitter and my Facebook page. Mark, welcome to KMOX in St. Louis. How are you?
Hey, glad to be here.
Let's start. I'm going to have my producer roll Eruption, and you sort of start because I want people to read your piece. But tell this story about Eruption, and you seem to be a guy. Do you play yourself who knows a lot about music, or are you just a fan?
Yeah, no, I play guitar and know a lot about it, obviously, which is one of the reasons why I'm so focused on this particular piece of music of Eddie Van Halen's, because Eruption really was that revolutionary.
1 minute and 42 seconds. Why is this 1 minute and 42 seconds so important?
Well, I mean, there's a strong case to be made. It's the most influential piece of instrumental rock music, instrumental music in rock history. That 1 minute and 42 seconds, second track on the first Van Halen album, in between Running with the Devil, and it bleeds into their cover of You Really Got Me by the Kinks. And there's a couple of different, there's two different basic aspects of it. One is that Eddie Van Halen was a real innovator in terms of what he did to modify his amplifiers to get this like really new distortion saturated heavy sound that people previously didn't get. So you're already right off the bat, you're hearing a guitar tone that is like so much heavier and more distorted and than you normally heard in the typical rock context. And then on top of that, as a matter of musical technique, Eddie Van Halen introduced tapping kind of to the guitar world, which is where you take your right hand or whatever hand you use to strum the guitar, and instead of strumming or picking the strings, what you do is you take your right hand and you start tapping notes on the fretboard below your fretting hand, and you get all sorts of like crazy fast notes and then you wouldn't otherwise be able to get. Never mind you get big interval jumps between lower notes and higher notes that you wouldn't otherwise normally hear. And no one had heard anyone do that until Eddie Van Halen did it. And that single-handedly launched what we now call guitar shredding, which was like the signature sound of hair metal and a lot of heavy metal in the 80s.
Now, is it true that he never really learned how to read music and that he just heard and watched?
I think that is true, but you have to remember that his father was a classically trained musician. You know, as part of Eruption, one of the phrases in Eruption that he's quoting, you know, an etude by, you know, Rudolf Kreutzer, who's a famous French classical musician, and he played, you know, with his father and other things like that. So he had a very substantial musical education, and obviously he had like a fantastic ear. But, you know, he wasn't like a big sight reader. Most guitarists aren't, frankly, in terms of reading music. But he didn't like play sessions or other things with other people a lot, where he had to adapt to different styles of music. I mean, he was kind of his own thing all the way. But he had a very, very solid grounding in like classical music as well.
That's amazing.
Yeah, he said, I was reading some of the Rolling Stone interviews and some of the quotes from the past, he admitted he faked out his music teacher for a while, because he just basically replicated what he was doing. The other thing that I've mentioned a couple of times this week is that he sort of started banging on the drums, but got frustrated because he couldn't play Wipeout, and he switched with Alex.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously there was a huge, huge family connection, you know, in terms of music. I mean, throughout his career, I mean, there were stories early on, actually, of you know, that they were, Alex and Eddie were brothers, right? There were stories of them, like, physically attacking each other on stage because they were upset with each other. But it was very much a brother relationship in that sense. I mean, they loved each other, and they were very, very close. And obviously, it shows they had an amazing musical connection because a huge part of Eddie's playing is he has this just incredible sense of rhythm. It's kind of a loose sense of rhythm, but it's always on at the same time. So a lot of the guitar shredding he does, you know, other people playing the same parts would sound like they're just playing scales or something. There's something very bouncy and inherently, you know, rhythmically musical about the way Eddie Van Halen approached all these fast runs and things like that. And I think that had a lot to do with the fact he had this, like, sort of mind meld with his brother, who was a phenomenal drummer. And, you know, them working together, they had an innate understanding of rhythm that really buoyed Van Halen, because Van Halen is different than a lot of hard rock and heavy, you know, the heavy metal bands that they inspired. I mean, Van Halen wasn't really a heavy metal band, but their tone and the way they approached things certainly inspired a lot of heavy metal. They were like a hard rock band that really kind of swung. I mean, they had a really sort of, you know, bouncy sense of rhythm, which is very unusual for a band as loud and heavy as they were.
Mark, you told the story, I hadn't heard this one, that you shared, that there's a bit of a story, and I don't know how much you have this backed up, that when Eddie Van Halen saw Led Zeppelin, he had a takeaway.
Yeah, I heard this on a guitar podcast some years ago, where Eddie Van Halen was, you know, huge fan of Led Zeppelin, because, you know, who wasn't in the 70s? And obviously, if you're a guitar player, I mean, Jimmy Page is amazing, and an amazing, you know, pioneer of the instrument as well. But, you know, Led Zeppelin back in the day, there were various substance abuse issues, and Page certainly had his struggles. And there were some sloppy Led Zeppelin performances over the years, you know, a number of them, actually. And supposedly Eddie Van Halen walked away being very, you know, disappointed with the concert that he saw because, well, there's two things there. One is, I don't know, maybe Jimmy Page turned in a lackluster performance. He'd been known to do that, you know, after consuming too many substances. But at the same time, anyone who's ever played in a band and played live knows that, like, in a four-piece band, it's actually really hard for a guitar player to, like, fill out all of this sonic space. And I think, you know, Eddie Van Halen, who was just a force of nature, like, took a real lesson from that. I mean, don't get me wrong, he still admired Jimmy Page quite a bit. But when Van Halen performed live, I mean, there were two components of it. One is he had that just amazing tone, and from an early time, he set it up so that, you know, he had this just all-consuming sound that filled up all of the space. And the other thing is, just as a performer, I mean, he was a force of nature. I mean, he was energetic. He loved playing the guitar. Anytime you saw Eddie Van Halen playing on stage, he had a smile plastered all over his face.
Smiling. Yep. Smiling ear to ear. That's absolutely right. I'm glad you said that, because that's what I think about when I think about Eddie Van Halen. I kind of think about, you know, some of the pictures that came out when he was really struggling with substance abuse and things like that as well, unfortunately. Were you, I wasn't, this is sort of sacrilege to say in St. Louis, Jane, as you probably know, but I was not, I didn't like Sammy Hagar when Sammy Hagar was Sammy Hagar, and I didn't like him with Van Hagar. I mean, I know they had a bunch of hits and everything, but I wasn't a big Van Hagar guy. Were you, Mark?
I mean, so here's the thing. I wasn't really even, like, that big a Van Halen guy, you know, most of my life. I mean, I came of age, I'm about, you know, 10 or so older years younger than you, and I came of age in the Pacific Northwest, and I graduated from high school in 1994, so you can imagine what, you know, my musical, you know, upbringing was in that sense.
Right.
A lot
right.
of it was about rejecting, you know, I was very into grunge and indie rock and things like that. And a lot of that was about rejecting, you know, sort of the excesses of, you know, the party rock and the hair metal and all that nonsense that was in the 80s. And at the same time, though, as I played guitar and as I got older, like, it just became absolutely undeniable what a force they were in terms of reshaping music. And, you know, I also started taking music a little less seriously, I think, in a good way, and Van Halen and definitely embodied that. As for the Van Hagar period, I actually have kind of a soft spot for a lot of it. I mean, I recognize, I think that everyone recognizes that the first five albums or so, I think it's five albums they did before Roth left the band after the 1984 record. But everyone recognizes, like, that's the classic Van Halen that, like, blew everyone's minds. But at the same time, you know, the slickly produced Van Hagar stuff really does have its merits. I mean, that's where you really start to see the band branch out. You get, like, bluesy songs like Come On Baby, Finish What You Started, and, you know, Right Now was a huge hit for them in the early 90s at a time when their career should have been flagging. You know, they were really carrying the torch still. And it was, I think it was partly because they were expanding musically, and Hagar let him do, you know, Hagar allowed them to go ahead, and he was an able front man, and I think supported their ambitions in a positive way. And I, you know, look, again, it's not the classic vintage Van Halen, but a lot of those songs are very fun to listen to. They're pleasant, and I think people do still enjoy them, even if they, you know, just were personally heartbroken by Roth leaving the band.
Mark Hemingway, great column. I really, really loved it. I'm so glad you came on here this afternoon. I want to close here as we wrap up with what you said at the end of the column and how you wrote it. You said in 2017, Eddie Van Halen was interviewed by the Smithsonian as part of a series on what it means to be an American. He was asked by a member of the crowd, of all the deceased musicians out there that are no longer around, could you pick one to play with? Or if you could pick one to play with, who would that be? The weight of his own mortality was no doubt hanging in his mind in ways that the audience could not have known. Wow, he said, taking a beat, I'd like to jam with my father again. And Mark Hemingway wrote at the end of the column, maybe now he'll get that chance. Rest in peace, Eddie Van Halen. Mark, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Get ready for a football Sunday as the 4-0 Kansas City Chiefs take on the Las Vegas Raiders. Pregame 11 a.m. Kickoff at noon. Touchdown, Kansas City! Hear it here on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
It just seems weird still to hear Las Vegas Raiders, doesn't it? But that should be a good contest this weekend. Jane, how's your no sugar thing going? Any update on that here this afternoon?
Yeah, I broke one time to have three bites of a dessert with a friend, and that's it.
Okay, well, that's not too bad.
40-something days now.
Okay, but what's the end game here? Because what I did this earlier, you remember.
Yeah, well, you were doing it just to, what, for vacation? I can't remember.
I did it for a month. Yeah, I did it for a month, kind of leading into a vacation. I wanted to prove to myself, because I eat a lot of sugar. Like, I eat a lot of sugar.
I do, too.
And I 30 days, I really didn't have any. Yeah, my daughter's in here saying she's eating sugar right now. She's eating Reese's dark chocolate thins, our favorite. But I did it for a month. I was able to do it. I was very crabby, as you remember. But then I thought, I kind of proved to myself I did it. But are you trying to eliminate forever? Because
weight.
I would recommend moderate. Oh, okay. All right. I would
I'm
recommend
trying to lose
moderation.
Weight, get
That's
the COVID
why.
Stuff off, and you know what I mean? And yeah, and it really is amazing to me, because I thought, you know, after 30, 40 days, I thought maybe I'd stop craving it. Like, I thought, okay, my addiction, because there's no doubt I'm addicted to sugar. Like, I give in, I admit it, I'm comfortable with that. But I thought the addiction would get a little easier, and it's not. So, I mean, I still want to go eat a pound of gummy bears, and that's probably, it's not good. So I think that's definitely my vice, is the sugar. So I'm trying to be good, yeah. Trying to get the COVID weight. Cause you know what? We could be going into a long winter. And so I don't need to start off, ultra heavy.
Trying to think. Let me think here back to last night, maybe between 8 and 11 o'clock. So I didn't have a lot to eat yesterday, and we had some chicken and pasta for dinner. But I got hungry around 8:30, 9 o'clock, made a peanut butter and jelly sandwich on an English muffin, and then I had some cookies, and then I had an ice cream sandwich. And I may have topped – this is not even a lie – and I may have topped it off with two little mini chocolate donuts. So I had more sugar last night between 8 and 11 o'clock than you've probably had in certainly more than 40 days. Yeah.
And
does that hurt when I described all that, though? Because I'm trying to make it.
Pretty much. The chocolate donuts, those chocolate covered donuts. I mean, you know, man, I could eat a whole bag of those. I mean, without even thinking.
Dave just texts me and he goes, how do you not weigh 400 pounds? Now, we both had, Dave used to. How much was your top weight, Klein?
I was about 280 at my top.
Okay, now I was 208, and this was in 1983, so it was a long time ago. And his question was, how do you not weigh 400 pounds? The reason is, and I'll give today as, you know, kind of an example, I've barely eaten anything today. I had like a little breakfast burrito. So during the day, I just don't eat very much. I don't know what it is, but then I eat dinner and I eat stuff at night. So I moderate a lot during the day. I try to get a little protein or something, but that's really the reason. So when I binge, it's not like I'm binging nonstop or all day.
Right.
Does that answer the question, Mr. Klein?
Well, that's called intermittent fasting. That's, and you know, I mean, it, and a lot of people, when I used to eat like that, I would eat when I was hungry, and I, you know, I could go a full day and not remember, oh, wow, I haven't eaten, you know, not anymore. And, but I think that's a version of intermittent fasting, which a lot of people believe in is part of, you know, that it's not unhealthy to eat that way.
Well, for me, and this is just telling you the way it is, a lot of times if I get worked up or if I'm nervous, like, you know, just getting ready for a show or something like that, I can't eat.
You don't
eat. I'm not hungry.
Right.
So, like, I'll give an example of, there was one night this week, and I'll get in trouble if I talk about what happened, but there were a couple of things that happened on Twitter that got me very fired up, and I was just, you know, I was worked up. No, I was worked up on Wednesday night,
right,
to the point where Becky's like, what do you want for dinner? I'm like, I'm not hungry. I'm not going to eat. And then I finally ate something like at 9 o'clock, but I got all worked up and I just didn't have an appetite. So,
no, that's true.
You know,
I'm not a stress eater. I'm not a stress eater. I'm either a bored eater or a happy eater. When I'm stressed out, that's when I can lose weight.
Yeah. Same way. Hey, yeah. I want to do number one songs here, Jane, and then I have an audio cut of the day. I'll cut you loose in a couple of minutes. Did you hear, I don't know how much this is getting mainstream coverage, but did you hear the allegation that Steve Scully from CNBC, I'm not from CNBC, from C-SPAN, who's going to, in theory, moderate the next debate? He says his Twitter account was hacked. Are you dialed into this?
I saw that, and I think didn't they, you know, they came out and said it was hacked, and you know, I mean, I guess.
Well, they say it was that. So here's what happened. So he put, and Jane, you're a prolific Twitterer.
Twitter.
I am too. Not as much as you. Yes. So there was an at Scaramucci reply. So that means,
yes,
he was replying to Anthony Scaramucci. So only people,
correct,
who saw or follow Scaramucci and Scully would have seen it. And this is what it said. Should I respond to Trump? That was the only thing it said. And then Scaramucci actually responds, ignore, he's having a hard enough time, some more bad stuff about to go down. So what it seems like is, and we've seen this before, it seems like, well, maybe Scully thought he was sending a, you know, a DM, and he wasn't, like,
right,
we saw this happen with what's his name,
account,
Anthony Weiner.
Or a different,
yeah,
account.
I don't know.
Sometimes people have dummy accounts. Yep.
Okay. Now, do you, let's talk about this, though. So the president's people are trying to make it seem like, look, this guy is a never Trumper because he had said some things in the past. He is, you know, he's biased in this. C-SPAN says that the account was hacked, but I mean, really? Do you believe that? Because people say they're hacked all the time when they're not really hacked and they say something that they're embarrassed by.
Well, I mean, I'm sort of suspicious of both. I'm suspicious as to whether it was hacked, and I'm suspicious that Trump is complaining about it because I don't think he wants to debate. So, I mean, I sort of think they're both using each other for their own purposes. But, you know, it looked like when you're responding to someone, when somebody hacks you, they don't usually respond to other people. They just take your account over and just start saying crazy stuff. I mean, so there was a hack for one response. It does seem a little strange.
Okay, but here's some unusual support. You know who is supporting? I'm going to read the tweet before I tell you that. You know, who said it here? I spoke with at Steve Scully. Only interactions with Scaramucci he has had are a June 2018 and a 2019 radio C-SPAN interview. He did not send the tweet. Steve is a good man and will make an excellent debate moderator. C-SPAN does an amazing job of giving people unfiltered access. You know who said that today? Sean Spicer.
Spicy's
back. You know, he's at Newsmax, but he's backing up.
Interesting.
He's backing up.
Scully.
You know, Scully.
And other people,
yeah,
have too, but, you know, it is kind of a strange thing. I mean, if you're going to go to the trouble to hack somebody, like, aren't you going to do more than one little response? I mean, you're going to, you know, I don't know.
Although, let me play it out with the conspiracy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
If you want to, if you're someone who is a hacker and you want to maybe create a little, you know, havoc here, chaos, if you do something like that, that is kind of weird and almost seems like it wouldn't be a hack, you could potentially raise questions about the debate moderator.
Right.
So I'm not saying that's what I believe. Yeah.
No, but if you want to spin the theory and then, you know, yeah, it's the Russians and they know how Donald Trump's going to respond. He's going to say, oh my God, it's rigged, it's rigged, it's rigged. And then he won't debate. I mean, you know, does that help Biden? Does that help, you know, Trump? Hard to say. But yeah, I mean, I guess you could spin a theory where somebody would be interested in hacking. I mean, it got out, So clearly somebody was watching, and clearly
Scaramucci responded. Yeah, and Scaramucci responded very quickly. Like, okay, wouldn't you, if someone tweeted that at you, and I don't know, you would say, wait a second, what are you talking about? Respond to what?
If I was tweeting with the debate moderator, oh, sure, I'd respond right away just to see if I could get further discussion. I absolutely would respond right away.
All right. So it's interesting. We'll see how it develops through the weekend and leading up to whatever debate might take place. 3:46. Dave, let's do number one songs here.
Whiplash propelled us into a time warp, Captain. Backward.
This is a Flashback Friday. Flashback. Number one songs of the 70s to today.
They don't make music like that anymore.
With Mark Rudin on KMOX.
Jane, I was going through, you know, when Eddie Van Halen died, I was going through a bunch of my ticket stubs from, you know, I used to save all these things from when I was a kid. You know, all the shows I would see at Kiel Opera House and the Checker Dome and stuff like that. And there was one, I'm going to harken back here as our number one song from 1970, because I saw him at the arena. If I can find my ticket stub here, even as a young guy who probably wouldn't be likely to see Neil Diamond. I was at a Neil Diamond concert, and he was number one this day in history, 1970. Dave, Cracklin' Rosie.
Awesome.
Your ticket stubs reveal about you when you kind of look closely at them, because, yes, I did see, I'm trying to find that one right now, because I know I saw, here it is, April 27th, 1988. At the Checker Dome, I think I took my mom and dad, and it was one of the most spectacular shows I've ever seen. I'm telling you, it's in my top five of concerts that I have seen. Here's one for you. Here's another one that I found that's a little embarrassing. 1982, Sunday, September 19th, Olivia Newton-John at the Checker Dome. $15. I sat in parquet.
I saw Dionne Warwick at the Fox, so, you know, I can't judge.
1980, I never saw this band. This is one of my great, great regrets. Never saw Queen. They were number one in 1980.
Another one bites the dust.
Yes. Great memories.
Another one bites the dust. I cannot believe, and I haven't even seen the recent incarnations of Queen after Freddie left the planet. Number one, 1990, Nelson, Love and Affection.
I can't live without your love and affection.
That's the
yes! Oh, my God. I can't even remember that song. Nelson. Yes.
I
can see the hair.
Jane,
can't you see the hair?
You don't?
Well, they had a lot of hair. They had a lot of blonde hair, as I remember. Right, Jane?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. There you go. All right. 2000, number one, Madonna with Music.
Okay.
I kind of like that song. Okay. Fast forward 10 years. 10 years ago, Bruno Mars. We haven't heard a lot from Bruno Mars lately, but he was number one with Just the Way You Are.
Love him.
He's someone I really, really want to see live because I've heard it is a spectacular performance. And then this is still number one. It's hanging in there. Number one, BTS, Dynamite.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Sponsored by the Good Feet Store, pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. So there were a lot of questions about the president. He went on Fox last night, and he sounded a little rough because he was clearing his throat. Some bloggers and other pundits wondering if he was out of the woods with COVID. Here's how it sounded.
I think the first debate, on the first debate, they oscillated the mic. But I will say this, absentee is okay because absentee ballots, excuse me.
Yeah, it didn't sound good at all. So a lot of questions even this morning. But then he went on with Rush Limbaugh. The president actually did 2 hours of radio with Rush Limbaugh on KMOX earlier today. He sounded fine.
You sound great. I've been reading that you got a hacking cough and that your voice is hoarse. You sound perfectly normal to me.
Well, there's always that little, that little lingering thing for a couple of days. But no, my voice is now perfect. I mean, for a couple of days, it's called the lingering thing. If you have hay fever, if you have something, you have that too, a little bit. But this is the most amazing thing that's happened. And I was asking the doctors today, 11 guys, great people. And I said, how bad was I? They said, you could have been very bad. You were going into a very bad phase. And so it wasn't like it was just going to, like with the kids, where they get it and they get sniffles and they're better 2 days later, right? This looks like it was going to be a big deal. And And you know what that means, right? That means bad, because I've lost five people, at least five people that were friends of mine. And I'm just saying that we have something that will cure this now, and a cure. And without us, without Trump administration, this would never have happened.
That's the president. I'm with Rush Limbaugh earlier today on KMOX. You can listen to it on the Radio Rewind function on radio.com. 356. Roger has traffic right up to Total Information PM on KMOX. Kevin Wheeler with sports at 415. Matt Chambers has your weekend forecast. All coming up.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.